forward momentum.
Genom Secure Testing Facility, Mega Tokyo.
Doctor, you wanted to see me?
Ah, Mr. Mason, Miss Madigan. It's the most fascinating thing. We believe we have isolated the cause of the mutated boomer material. Several molecular components of the adrenal-like serum seem to reactivate and energize areas of the boomer's synthetic protein matrix that have been previously dormant. The affected sequences cause it to begin immediate replication, much like the healing abilities of a human.
Indeed.
This process requires new raw materials, which cause the boomer's systems to deploy the protein chains outside its original body.
Which is why the victim's boomer-based cybernetics began to consume the Whitmark building?
Exactly. The process continues until the affected proteins consume the last of the adrenalike. There was enough in the sample we took to consume most of central Megatokyo.
I see. You said this was similar to human healing. If the amounts of the serum were smaller and better controlled, could this process be used to repair damage in an ordinary boomer?
Of course, sir. Had the affected cybernetics been something more complex, such as a neural tissue, or if they had the ability to manufacture even natural adrenaline, who knows? It may replicate an entirely new organism.
Fascinating. Excuse me. Yes? Of course. Immediately, sir. I'm afraid we must cut this short, Doctor. Kindly summarize your findings and upload them to the facility's secure system. Kate?
Chairman needs you.
Yes, more busy work at Quincy's bidding. How are your efforts with Nightwatch over the 80 police coming?
Rather well, all things considered. Using them as our hounds generated a surprising amount of data.
Any firm leads?
Some. Our own teams have been operating under the idea that they are some sort of cyborgs, or maybe even boomer-like units. Inspector Wong says they're humans in power armor.
Armor decades ahead of anything else?
He noticed something our own techs missed. Watch the video of them in action. See how they walk or run. Their hip joints have human movement tolerances.
Interesting. I seem to recall something.
Brian? Are you all right?
Yes. Just a bit of headache. It's already passing. In any event, I have just a fleeting memory from the Hermes fragment about theoretical suit designs. Something for hazardous environments I can't quite remember.
You know how I feel about that vile thing.
Power understood as power controlled.
And do you have control of it?
Of course I do.
You look exhausted, love. You should go home and rest.
There's no time for that. Things are at a critical point. I have a small space set aside in my office here.
You're spreading yourself too thin.
Don't patronize me, Kate. I know what I'm doing. Soon, when this project is over, we'll have what we need. And the company, the world, will be ours.
Forward Momentum presents Bubblegum Crisis. Mega Tokyo 2047, the story of the Night Sabers. Early evening, March 8th, 2047. AD Police Headquarters, Mega Tokyo.
It was calm for once. I leaned back in my office chair and rubbed my eyes. That felt like they had sandpaper for lids. I crossed another name off the list of red Mercedes Gullwing owners in the Mega Tokyo area. 12 down, 4 to go. 16 in all, and so far, none of them can be the killer. It was all beginning to look like a dead end. Something tugged at my sleep-deprived brain. The smell of... well, nothing that came out of the headquarters dispensers could ever be called coffee. But this seemed close.
Leon, if you're going to ignore wise counsel and continue to delve into your Mercedes murderer off hours, at least have the good sense not to fall asleep on your desk while on the clock. Okay?
Daily Wong placed a steaming cup of Not Java on my desk as he sat at his own. Marry me.
Can't do it. You're Catholic. Folks would never forgive me.
I snorted and took a sip of that sweet nectar of life.
Those records Nana gave you, proving insightful?
Not really. In Mega Tokyo and the surrounding areas, there are 16 cars that fit the make and model per set the killer drove. I've been able to eliminate 12 of them. That leaves 4. But those 4 all seem to be dead ends.
Ah, the plot thickens, as they say. Anyway, leave that for now. Rollins wants us.
Technically, Daly and I were detached from our old positions and part of the Hush Hush Night Watch Division. But our old job had to get done, too. I grumbled something particularly unkind about my superiors in general and slouched after Daly. John Rollins was an older man who continually worried about his retirement. Something he reminded everybody about at the top of his lungs, usually with flying spittle as punctuation. I knew there was a good cop buried inside him somewhere. Probably because Rollins had eaten the poor guy years ago. We stepped into his office, only to discover it was packed with people already. The heads and adjutants of no less than 3 of the AD Police's mobile tactical squads. Technically, me and Daly made 4.
Now that the pampered little princes have joined us...
oh boy, Rollins was in fine form this evening.
We can begin. I just got off the phone with the chief. The normal cops have foisted yet another detail off on us. Seems the Tokyo Revitalization Committee is finally doing something about the areas south of the rift.
I snorted. The Tokyo Revitalization Committee was nothing more than a branch of Genom's marketing and PR department.
They're doing a big press event tomorrow. Lots of cameras, ceremonial groundbreaking, the usual dog and pony show. Leon?
Crap. You caught me spacing out.
Since you're so interested, I'm assigning your squad to crowd control. Try and stay off the front page.
I winced. We always try, Chief.
Later, at the secret home base of the Night Sabers.
Combing through encrypted data is a slow process, like rolling a big rock uphill. When the data is corrupt, it becomes like rolling a big rock up a muddy hill in a hurricane. But super hacker extraordinaire Nene Romanova is up to the challenge. About 9 months ago, I finally managed to sneak into the Genom mainframe. Unfortunately, what data I'd managed to copy had been damaged by the computer's defense programs. Most of it was a slagged mess, but some of it was still viable. Ever since, I'd been combing through it for anything we could actually use. It was tedious work. The kind of thing with 1,000 technical details that all have to be in your head at once, and slight distractions can be disastrous.
Distractions such as ringing phones! What?!
I could feel Celia wince on the other end.
Nene, sorry, did I interrupt you?
Celia. Calming breath, calming breath. Yes, but it's all right. What's up?
I just wanted to see how it was going. You spent every night this month piecing that mess back together.
It's been tough, but I think I've got something. I was working on the confirmation when you called. I think I found a hidden Genom facility in Tokyo itself.
Oh?
Yeah, a real black hole of a place. They have no regular access to the outside world. But it seems one of the workers brought in a private terminal. It's intermittent and still behind local firewalls.
Do you think you can get in?
I considered. I was good. Heck, I was the best. But that was ridiculously tight security. I think so, but it's going to take some prep time.
All right then. Call it a night. Sleep. It's waited this long. It can wait till you're rested.
And suddenly, I felt like I hadn't slept in a week. I fought off a yawn and tapped in the shutdown sequence.
What? Good point. See you tomorrow, boss.
The next morning, just south of the rift.
There are times being an urban hermit really sucks. My tractor trailer down the rift is great when I want to be alone. Nothing says go away, not welcome, like living in the middle of what looks like a burnt out war zone. I mean, it's not, really. Not anymore. It just looks that way. It does make cooking a real chore, though. No gas, only occasional electricity, and cooking over an open fire loses its appeal the 100th or so time you've done it. So, like a lot of mornings, I'd trudged up to a diner. Now, the areas around the rift aren't pretty. Most of the land on the North Ridge is unstable, and to the south... well, there's a reason the locals call the area Dickensville. It's a slum right out of Victorian England. There's usually electricity and other utilities, unless someone more desperate than you hijacked the lines. It's not the sort of place to park a car for any length of time either, unless you were donating the parts to the local sub-economy. Don't get me wrong, Dickensville isn't really that bad. It's actually a good place to live for those making the bare minimum and who are smart enough to take a few precautions. These are people who worked hard, paid their bills, and hoped for something better. People like me, actually. I grew up in Dickensville. Most of my friends from before still lived there. The neighborhood was part of my story, part of my soul. I stopped in at an old favorite place and ordered a plate of eggs and bacon. Hey, my soul's gotta eat too, after all. Halfway through my second cup of coffee, I noticed a crowd forming across the street. The diner faced a vacant lot, with an old, pre-quake apartment complex beyond that. I'd noticed the construction equipment as I came in, but now a small mob of people filled the lot. They weren't idle folks, either. Many held signs or shouted, mostly at a small knot of media types near the construction equipment. A couple faces I recognized from the evening news, and someone who may have been our supposed mayor? Local politics, who had the time to keep up? I put some bills on the table and drifted out into the mob. I recognized one older lady with a sign. Mrs. Tanaka, what's going on?
They're stealing our homes, that's what! They're gonna knock the whole street of buildings down into the rift!
What? My trailer wasn't in the probable impact zone of the debris, but still... Mrs. Tanaka hadn't stopped talking.
Damn Genom scum! In my day...
Genom. My head snapped up, and I started peering toward the bigwigs beyond the police unit.
Yeah, one of their senior VPs is up there smiling for the cameras.
If Mrs. Tanaka kept speaking, I didn't hear her. I stood, frozen to the spot. Up near a ring of cameras stood Mason. Brian J. Mason. The man who killed Rick. The man who'd shattered my life. A volcanic rush of anger melted the icy shock. Next thing I knew, I'd pushed through the mob, leaving some poor ADP goon moaning on the ground. With a cry of pure hate, I launched myself at Mason, who turned at the sound and sneered as I ran into his bodyguard Boomer at top speed. The thing grabbed me by my throat and threw me hard to the pavement. Fireworks exploded in my skull as it lifted me up once again, holding me a foot off the ground at arm's length while I kicked desperately. As Mason dismissed me and turned back to his interrupted conversation, the boomer began to squeeze.
Nearby, at the AD police command post.
My squad was deployed in a strong crowd control formation. They had orders to keep the peace, but not to provoke the crowd. So far, it was calm and stable. I was sitting back in my patrol car, hating every moment of it. It's times like these when I think the public's right. The ADP are just a bunch of jackbooted thugs. I mean, here we are, protecting a corporate bigwig who wanted to tear down a bunch of people's homes. All they were doing was peaceful protesting. In their place, I don't think I would have been nearly so civil. And yet, we were on the scene. In full armor and riot gear, tasked with keeping the populace as far away from the Genom personnel as we could, including the attendant reporters and cameras. To further add to the irony pile,
The head of this little shindig was Brian J. Mason, one of the four remaining people I had not been able to cross off the Red Mercedes list. No wonder Pris hates my guts. Sounds of a scuffle over the squad frequency brought me back to reality. Someone had broken through the line. I dashed from the car and towards the gap in time to see that Dick Mason's bodyguard Boomer lifting some lady by her neck. My gut froze. It was Pris. She was going limp and her face began to darken ominously. Boomer! Police override code 957. Release and stand down. Nothing happened. Mason wasn't even watching. He had his back turned, discussing things with some other corporate suit. I snapped my badge and sidearm up to aim and shoved them in Mason's face. Mr. Mason, your boomer just ignored a legal police override. Control it or face charges. Mason's eyes flicked to my badge, then to his boomer and Pris's dangling body. The son of a bitch sighed, as if we were bothering him with our petty problems.
Drop her.
The boomer's fist opened and Pris fell into a heap on the ground. She immediately began to cough and splutter.
My company is paying for 80 police protection, such as it is, not to have you wave your guns at us.
Your bodyguard was killing this woman.
And she attacked me. My associate was merely doing your job.
I waved the squad medic over. Mason was apparently done with us. He turned back to the other suit. Everything about this prick made my blood boil. He was untouchable, and he knew it. Time to play a hunch. Richard Decker says hi. Mason's reaction was subtle, but it was there. I rattled him. For just an instant, but I'd gotten him. The guilty little toe rag. He controlled it almost instantly.
Excuse me, who?
Richard Decker, former night watchman at Wiz Laboratories. I've gotten to know him very well over the last few months. His friends, his enemies, his secrets. Good luck on your latest project, Mr. Mason. He didn't quite beat a hasty retreat. He was cagier than that. But I had him, and he knew it. Crying shame I couldn't prove anything, though. He gathered his associates with a flick of his eye, and they all made their way to waiting cars. I felt myself grinning as I turned back to check on Pris. The medic was gently probing at her throat, but she was looking at me, her eyes full of questions.
She's gonna be all right, but she should go to a hospital, just to be sure.
No problem. I'll take her. The medic arched an eyebrow at me. I jerked a thumb over my shoulder. The crowd was dispersing. The show was over. Collins can handle the mop-up. With that, I helped Pris to my car. She didn't say a word the whole way there. When I opened the passenger door for her, she finally asked.
Why?
Pris's voice was almost a croak. Because if I arrest you for failing to kill that scumbag, he has to testify about why his boomer nearly killed you, and why it ignored a police override. I don't think Genom wants that kind of press. We were both silent the rest of the ride to the hospital.
The Loop Highway.
As my driver cut through traffic, I loosened my tie and tried to regain control. At least this unhealthy show of emotion wasn't on public display. My driver in the forward compartment, the massive bodyguard who sat next to me, and the red-headed feminine assistant across from me were all boomers. How had that annoying little puppy connected me to Decker? I'd left nothing to chance. The entire affair handled personally and under redundant layers of security. And yet, that smug little punk. What was wrong with me? That cop was nothing, just an insignificant little bug. Who was he to challenge me so, and in public, no less? A searing jolt of pain shot through my head, every nerve in me suddenly aflame. I pitched forward and clutched at my forehead, supported only by the seatbelt. These headaches were happening with more and more frequency, but they usually faded after a few moments. This one seemed doggedly determined to cling on for much longer.
He's a threat. A threat to us. That cannot be allowed to continue. McNichol must be dealt with.
The pain faded as quickly as it began. With a sigh of resignation, I gestured to my assistant. It handed me a small cell phone. I dialed a number and waited for the call to go through.
This line's secure?
I wouldn't have used it if it were otherwise. I have an issue, and I need you to clear it up for me.
An issue? Who is target?
An ADP inspector named McNichol. I'll have our file sent to your usual drop.
Ah, challenge. It will take a bit of time.
Just as long as you accomplish it with your accustomed precision. Nothing can trace back to me.
As if it ever does.
Later that day, at the Central City Sanitation Hub.
My name is Dwight Evans, and I am officially the least important person in all of Megatokyo. At least, that's what my douche of a supervisor keeps telling me. I guess that makes him the second least important person in all of Megatokyo. I work a sweet little union job deep in the bowels of the city's sublevels. I secure and reinitialize the systems of the entire fleet of, wait for it, sewer maintenance and trash removal boomers. Believe it or not, it's a fairly important job. If I don't push the button just right, then who knows what disgusting filth may back up into the mayor's swank new mansion. Know what I mean? Usually, though, this job is just what it sounds like. Miles and miles of, well, you know. But not tonight. Tonight was Friday, and I had a sweet little time planned with the love of my life. I'd been looking forward to this all week, and now it was finally here. The intercom suddenly blared.
Hey, Evans, you run that wipe and recovery program on boomer number 473 yet?
My boss never comes down here. That's what the freaking intercom is for. I glanced at the screen. I'd done no such thing, but it would be another hour's work, and I was late already. Yeah, boss. Did it a while ago. He just gave me his, I understand and acknowledge your words, grunt, and cut the connection. Man, I am so sick of this blasted crap. From his recharging cradle, boomer number 473's head swiveled to face me.
So sick of this blasted crap.
The irony of the statement made me chuckle. The boomer kept repeating it over and over as I left for my date.
So sick of this blasted crap. So sick of this blasted crap.
Mercy General Hospital, that night.
The hospital was the usual waste of time. I didn't have insurance, so after several hours waiting while people with more serious injuries and deeper wallets were seen to, I finally got a once-over by a doctor. He pronounced me fit and fine, though he gave me some foul syrup to take every day until my throat felt better. It was well after dark when I finally walked out. Somehow, I wasn't surprised to see Leon waiting for me, standing next to an ADP patrol car.
Change your mind about that arrest?
Nah. But this time of night, only a maniac would drive you home to the Rift. So
obviously you volunteered.
He actually blushed. I couldn't help it. I erupted in laughter. Leon tries so hard to be macho and tough, but that unsure and awkward side of his is rather cute. Fortunately for his pride, my throat felt like it was full of broken glass, so the laughter didn't last long. I took pity on him and got in. We pulled out of the hospital lot and into traffic. I thought about the events of the day. I knew Mason was Rick's murderer. But how had Leon figured it out? And more to the point, why had he all but accused the man like that? Hey, can I ask you something?
Sure, go ahead.
Back there, I heard what you told that corporate shark. Do you think...
He had something to do with Richard's death? I'm sure of it now. I just need to get some solid proof together.
Holy crap! Leon was going after him, and not in a small way. I wasn't the only person who'd heard what Leon said. With all the press around, it had to be on camera somewhere. He was poking a bear with a stick. a very short stick. I had to play this carefully. If Leon realized I knew the truth, it'd lead to more than a few awkward questions. Finally, I settled on the big one. Why? He was quiet for a long moment. I thought for sure he wasn't going to answer when he finally spoke up.
I'm helping you because I owe someone. Someone I can't pay back. So I pay it forward.
Whatever it was obviously painful and private. I'd always been able to read Leon like a book. He didn't want to tell me why, but he would if I asked. I didn't pry. It wouldn't be right. Guess I don't corner the market on skeletons in the closet after all. 20 minutes later, we descended the packed dirt road into the rift, and Leon pulled the car to a stop next to my trailer. I gave him a thank you smile and climbed out. He called after me.
Are you ever gonna take my advice and keep your head down?
I turned and gave him a level but friendly look. Which of us is more likely to get shot? The urban recluse rock singer or the cop?
Going on history? You by a mile.
I laughed and closed the door. He pulled out with a wave. Wait, that was banter. When the hell have we started bantering? As I unlocked the trailer's side door, my cell phone buzzed.
Press, we've got trouble. Major trouble.
Night Saber's mobile command truck, 20 minutes later.
I hurriedly made the final checks on my heart suit. All systems were functioning 100%. This was going to be so great! Not the fight, I mean. Boomer riots are horrible things, don't get me wrong. I just meant this was going to be the first field test of my new toy! Mackie had just finished giving my Moto Slave a serious upgrade. The unit sat gleaming in motorcycle mode on the rear launch platform, all gunmetal gray with pink trim. Cute and menacing, all in one package. Its onboard computers and signal boosting gear were designed to supplement my hard suit's own electronic countermeasures. On top of that, it also had the same firepower of Priss's red Moto Slave. It was time to kick some serious ass!
Nene, pay attention!
Huh? Oh, sorry, Celia. Celia's usually tolerant smile flicked in and out.
As I was saying, you're still on Overwatch. Keep all electronic eyes off us at all times. Stopping a riot in the middle of town is way too public for my tastes.
Well, there went my fun! Sure, I'm not nearly as good in a fight as Priss or Lena, or even Celia with her hard suit's firepower, but come on! I swallowed my objection and nodded. Right.
Good. Now, the 80 police have only limited resources in the area, but a full tactical unit is inbound. Even worse, we don't know how many boomers are actually engaging. They appear to be waste removal units, and at the last count, the city has as many as 20 of them.
What behavior are they exhibiting?
When boomers went rogue, they fell back on what seemed right, their primary programming. They just did it in strange new ways.
Reports say they're pulling things apart and tossing them in the open disposal bins on their backs, out of which the debris falls and they begin the process again. Cars, buildings, plants, people. Priss, you and Nene drop first. You'll charge straight in and create a distraction, while Nene and her new Moto Slave hang back and cover all of us. Then, Lena and I will drop in from above.
Got it, Celia.
4 minutes later, the rear hatch of the truck came down, and Priss and I kicked our mecha bikes down the ramp and onto the highway. The truck already pulling away, and down a side street. I triggered my bike's jump jets, which launched it 3 meters into the air. Then, I selected combined mode, and the Moto Slave reconfigured itself around my hard suit, becoming both extra armor and adding a true flight pack to my suit's more limited vertical lift. I hit the jets and flew up to a nearby building that was still under construction. I parked myself on the fifth floor and set about using my electronic warfare suit to jam all transmissions and disrupt any unshielded electronics I could reach. With the Moto Slave's help, that reach was surprisingly far. I think most of downtown Tokyo entered the Dark Ages when I flipped the switch. Nothing would function I did not allow. From my perch, I had a great view of the action. Priss rode her Moto Slave straight through the police barricades. She crashed into the knot of rampaging boomers and jumped off. Her hard suit's arsenal is designed for in-close fighting. On her right fist, she's got a knuckle bomber, a device designed to reach through the hard-armored exteriors of boomers to the gooey center. Even now, she slammed her right fist into one boomer, and her knuckle bomber blew a foot-wide hole out its back, severing the thing's artificial spine. Her moto slave, meanwhile, had also shifted its form. Instead of combining with her hard suit, though, it had assumed drone mode, basically an 8-foot-tall bipedal robot. The red moto slave was wading through opponents. I thought to myself that Celia's estimate of 20 was way too low. Speak of the devil. Celia and Lena's hard suits dropped on the insane ball of techno carnage like avenging angels. Their hard suits were capable of flight all on their own, no moto slave needed. I watched as Lena used her suit's tasers to fry one boomer outright. Then she sped forward to take on a knot of them that were trying to swarm Pris and her moto slave. But wait, the one she'd barbecued, had it just moved? I watched intently and yes, it got up. Hefting a fallen comrade's severed leg, it lurched towards Lena's blind side. Lena, behind you! She didn't hear me. Damn it! She must not have updated her suit's software to deal with the increased amount of electronic noise my moto slave was putting out. I don't even remember doing it, but I set my moto slave to drone mode and jetted clear of it. I dropped, using gravity as much as assist from my suit's limited jump jets to close the distance to Lena's ambusher. My hard suit's only got one weapon, a small railgun that fires armor-piercing explosive needles. I didn't think there was any way they'd penetrate the thick skin of my target, so I rolled forward as I fell, and with a yell worthy of Jackie Chan, I buried my hard suit's right foot in the thing's chest. A split second later, the thing's head exploded.
God damn it, Nene!
I picked myself up from the ground to see Chris whipping the barrel of her drone's anti-boomer rifle out of the way. The drone itself was in bad shape, 10 feet away. Chris was lugging the outsized shotgun around like a kid trying to shoot Daddy's hunting rifle. Everything else was quiet. I guess I'd gotten the last one. Well, we did.
If I hadn't been trying very carefully to avoid Lena, I would have killed you.
Later, Pris. For now, let's clear out. Something's wrong.
As we all hit our jets and left, I noticed that the police barricades were significantly larger. The ADP tactical unit had arrived at last, apparently. Whoa. Why hadn't I registered that?
AD Police Cordon.
There they go. Did we manage to record it this time?
Yep, got it all. Whatever usually blocks our scans suddenly cut out.
Not just ours. Look.
Is that a TV news chopper?
This is a Media Break special report. I'm Takeshi Phillips. Downtown Megatokyo was rocked tonight by an unprecedented boomer incident involving no less than 35 municipal maintenance boomers. The machines were soon brought under control by the AD police, but in a shocking development, they had some help. As video from our own Chopper 5 clearly shows, several other people? Boomers? No clue, were involved. Speculation is rampant that these are in fact a band of high-tech mercenaries known as the Nightsabers, long thought to be just an urban legend.
You've been listening to Bubblegum Crisis Paradigm Shift, Episode 1, a Forward Momentum production, based on the anime Bubblegum Crisis, which is copyright AIC Artmec. Featured in this episode were Christopher Stadther as Leon McNichol, Lindsay Steinler as Nene Romanova, Taylor Carlson as Pris, Edwin Tiong as Brian J. Mason, and Mika Touche as Dwight Evans. Also heard in this episode were Jen Rhodes as Kate Madigan, Eric Ulp as Daily Wong, Devlin James as John Rollins, Kristen Mass as Celia Stingray, Trisha Groves as Mrs. Tanaka, Rina Adachi as Lena Yamazaki, Mike Dent as Mackie Stingray, Will Navison as Takeshi Phillips, and Kelly Steinman and Sammy Sadek as the ADP officers. This is Dylan Spencer. The episode was written and directed by Devin Cox. Music for the series is drawn primarily from the Bubblegum Crisis anime. For a complete music and vocal credit list, please visit forwardmomentumproductions.com/BGC. Bubblegum Crisis Paradigm Shift is a non-profit fan production produced for the enjoyment of the fans. All rights to Bubblegum Crisis, the music, and non-original sound effects used herein remain the property of their original creators. No infringing claims are intended.